The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
It gives us great pleasure, as usual, to welcome the Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi and Mrs. Goldfein, who are here as they've been every year for many, many years. It's an extra added pleasure for me to be able to introduce Rabbi Goldfein, who is my Rosh Hashiva, just explain, everyone knows about Rabbi Goldfein, and I'm sure that everyone knows that the illustrious pupils that have come out of the yeshiva that Rabbi Goldfein and Mrs. Goldfein have built. Those include the chief rabbi, I don't know how many of you know Rabbi Kesev, who's the head of the Board of Education, Rabbi Finkelstein, who's the rabbi of the Chevra Kedisha, Rabbi Liebenberg, who is the a senior rabbi in Cape Town of one of the big shuls there, the Claremont Shul. There are senior educators, that's the chief rabbi. There are senior educators in Johannesburg, Rabbi Krawitz, who's the principal of the Boys Hirsch Lion School. And the amazing thing, and maybe to a certain extent equal in some way, is the amount of people who have passed through the yeshiva that haven't taken smicha, but they've been to the yeshiva as a place where one learns Torah. And they've joined the various shuls in Johannesburg and around South Africa and around the world. And I would say that probably numbers in the hundreds of boys who have come in and have learnt and have gone and built families and have joined shuls and have helped to strengthen the shuls wherever they have been. And very often they form the backbones of many of the shuls, and they form the core of many of the learning groups in the shuls. And this is really the meat and potatoes on which shuls are built. People that sit and that learn together in shurim and attend shurim. And this is what the yeshiva has produced. And it's been through, when one looks, it's been through the leadership of Rabbi and Mrs. Goldfein, that one can have on the one hand the chief rabbi, who's got a very, very different position to someone who's the head of the Board of Education, to someone who's the rabbi of the Chevra Kedisha. Very, very different positions. And for me, what one of Rabbi Goldfein's great leadership qualities is that he's able to relate to everyone with their own individuality and help mold them with the abilities that they have to be able to take that and to put it back into the Jewish people, so that they can have their own unique place and they can develop that and give back to the community. And with that, come in. And with that, I call on Rabbi Goldfein to address us.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much, Rabbi Brian Offert, Choshev Rabbonim, Rebbitzin, my Rebbitzin, Rebbitzin Chana, Rabbi Brian, your new rabbi, Rabbi Avigoda, who I've just met, Rabbi Vigoda, who I just met just a few minutes ago, and his wife, if she's present. And ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to be here. As Rabbi Brian mentioned, we've been coming here for many, many years now. Many years, it's probably over 20 years. And it's always a great experience to be here and to see that even though the Durban Jewish community is a small community in number, but its vibrance, its activity, and always there's something new every year when we come. The rabbi has initiated something very new. And to see living Yiddishkeit, living Jewishness. I'm sorry, so many times they have a microphone. I'm sorry you're having difficulty hearing. I want to mention that in the illustrious Talmidim that the yeshiva has produced, that Rabbi Brian spoke about, he forgot to mention that he's one of them. And he occupied very, very important positions He was at our own school, Hirschlein School. He was in Bulawayo, and now for many years he's been here in the Durban Jewish community together with his Rebbetzin. He also was from our outstanding students of the yeshiva. The fact is he was in the same group as the new chief rabbi, Rabbi Warren Goldstein, and Rabbi Craig Kasep, who's the head of the Jewish Board of Education. It was an outstanding group, and naturally, we're sorry to hear that he is leaving, he and his wife and his family, but we certainly hope they will return to South Africa to carry on the wonderful work that they are doing. And I thank Brian for that elaborate introduction. I must get right down to business because they warned me that we can't have this year end too late tonight because of the World Soccer. So we got to get right down to business. The title of the shiur this evening, is Jewish Survival, to Survive as a Jew. There are three forces that stand up against Jewish survival. Two we are very aware of. The third, not so much. The first one, obviously, is anti-Semitism. Bechol dor v'dor, einim aleinu lechaleseinu. In every generation they stand up, the nations of the world, many of them, to destroy us. For one reason or the other, there's the sinas hagoyim, the nations hate us. Started with Parai and Mitzrayim, Parai in Egypt. It even started before then, but we'll start with him. And then there was the Babylonian Empire that destroyed our Beis HaMikdash. And then there was Modaioparas, the Syrian Empire. There was Haman and Achashverosh. And then there was the Greek Empire. There was the story of Hanukkah. And then there was Esav. Esav's family is Rome, Amalek. They destroyed our second Beis HaMikdash and we're in Golus because of them. And so many things happen today because of them. And there was the Spanish Inquisition and all the pogroms and the Nazi Holocaust and Stalinism, Communism. And now we face another tzora, Ishmael, the Arab tzora. It doesn't end. And all of this was the picture of either annihilation or forced assimilation and baptism. Thank you very much. Thank you. The second force that stands up against Jewish survival is an assimilation to the nations by choice. And this also has been a great, thank you, this also has been a great problem. In the last couple centuries, we saw enormous assimilation in Western Europe, the Austrian-Hungarian empires under Franz Josef, Germany, Hungary, Austria, Western Poland, England. This gave birth to the Reform and Conservative movements, reached alarming and unbelievable heights of assimilation and intermarriage. Intermarriage was up to 80% and 90% in those lands. Many times it led even to baptism. There's the famous case of Lord Beaconsfield. That was Disraeli. He was the prime minister to the most powerful queen in the world, Queen Victoria. This was not long ago. It was just at the turn of the previous century. And in order to promote his position further, and you can imagine, prime minister of the most powerful queen in the world at that time, you can imagine how powerful he was. And he baptized himself. And this was common. Or it was not uncommon. The well-known historian Rabbi Beryl Wein writes that you will very seldom meet a third generation and certainly fourth generation Reform Jew, which is true because I've never met one. Why? Because by that time they're not Jewish anymore. And this happened also when Jews first came to America. Because of the hardships, the difficulties, they started to shed their Jewishness. And they became like the Goyim. Now, the reason for this assimilation amongst the Gentile world was to escape from the inequities of being a Jew, to escape from the ghetto, to get into the so-called modern world. And this was caused by the inducement and the enticement of new opportunities opening up. The Jews, many times, if they were Jews, they couldn't advance their positions. They couldn't get into universities. They couldn't be doctors. They couldn't be landowners. They couldn't get a job on Shabbos that they wouldn't have to work on Shabbos. It's also that reason. This is a second great force that stands up against Jewish survival. But there's a third one, and that's the one that we're not so aware of. And this is taking place presently in the world, and at one of the highest rates ever known to the Jewish world. And this is, again, an assimilation to the nations of the world, but not because they're being enticed to. Because today, in most of the Western world, if we take the United States, if we take Canada, North America, most European countries today, most of the Western world, it's not a disadvantage to be a Jew. You can be a Jew and you can become a doctor, you can become a lawyer, you can become a multimillionaire, you can get into the finest universities. The fact is, the governments of the world, you take the governments of the United States, some of the top advisors to the president, some of the most powerful people of the United States Treasury, you take Greenspan, you take others, were Jews. So there is no disadvantage today to be a Jew. The fact is, there's a trend in Hollywood and other places where there's an advantage to be a Jew. Yet, the assimilation is enormous. Why? This is not because of an enticement. This is because simply a lack of Jewish education. An example. America, which is possibly the largest Jewish community in the world today. Some say Israel has become the largest Jewish community because they have over 5 billion Jews. America, they don't know how many Jews there are. Some estimate as high as 6 or 8 million Jews. Others say maybe less than 5 million. And the reason why they don't know is because of this enormous assimilation. Of the population in America, we'll say anywhere between 4 and 5 and 8 million Jews. Everybody agrees that the maximum amount of Orthodox is somewhere between 7 and 10%. In other words, we're talking about millions and millions of Jews that are non-Orthodox. The conservative and the reform movements are panicking because today they're not conservative and reform either necessarily. They have disappeared. The fact is, in my time, when I grew up, the conservative and reform movements were totally against Jewish day schools. Today, they're building them wherever they can. The unaffiliated today is the greatest segment of the Jewish population. The fact is, that could be maybe 60, 70, 80% of the Jewish population. The conservative and reform movement, because of their panic, they're creating all kind of new things in order to try to get some of these Jews back. Instant conversion, if they marry out of faith. Paternal Judaism they've created. That means that they have decided, paskind, that if a child has a Jewish father and a non-Jewish mother, we will also consider him Jewish. They're doing this all to try to hang on to Jews. Surveys have shown that in large Jewish cities that can have a 500,000 Jews or hundreds of thousands of Jews, you'll have to look hard and wide to find Jewish women that light candles Friday night. It's hit rock bottom. A long time ago, they used to say that there are two things that will keep the Jew Jewish. One was the experience of the Holocaust, and two is the birth of the State of Israel. Already 10, 15 years ago, I heard one of the top leaders who was in Kiruv, outreach programs, he's saying it's totally irrelevant today. And we'll explain why. When was the birth of the State of Israel and when was the Holocaust? We're talking some 60 years ago. 60 years ago, if you take someone who's 15 years old, this means it happened 45 years before he was born. If we take the average person in this room was born in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, something that happened in the late 1800s, what impact does that have on you? He says this is ancient history to the Jewish youth that's out there. You're talking about, to us it's not. You're talking about something that happened 40 years before they were born. That's like something that happened in the 1890s, 1900, 1910. It has no effect on them. There's the famous Brompton family, that's from the Lickers, in Canada. There's the famous Brompton family in Canada. Multi-millionaires, Seagram's Liquor, Jewish. When he saw his own grandchildren intermarry and assimilate, he panicked. And he's the one who started what is known today as Birthright, to fund every Jewish youth in America, if he's never been to Israel, will pay the fare, to try to do something about this. The assimilation, the intermarriage rate, officially, nationally, it's supposed to be about 50-55% in America. I have a fellow South African that lives in Seattle, Washington. That's a city probably of 15-20,000 Jews. He tells me it's up to 85% there. He says the national average is, because you have your mega populations that bring it down. But in your other cities, it climbs to that. This is not the American story. This is the same as Canada, in Canada, North America, South America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. This is the story all over in the Gola. Either that or worse. So we have three forces that threaten Jewish survival. One is what we call anti-Semitism, those that hate us. The second is when the Jew was disadvantaged being a Jew. So he was enticed to shed his Jewishness in order to become like the Goy that would give him far more opportunities. That's not so relevant today in the Western world at all. The third is it's classified as the quiet death of Judaism. And that is, there is no enticement to become. Many times you're more advantaged. I heard once, they asked, what are the requirements to become a great musician? This was on the radio. So they said, one is to be Jewish. A disadvantage to be a Jew today, you see. So there's no disadvantage in the Western world. Yet we're losing them by the droves. Why? Don't educate a Jewish child. Don't do anything. And this is what you'll have. This is what a Chazal tell us, the sages tell us. This is a tinaik, that is gavul bein hagoyim. You take a child and he grows up amongst non-Jews, what do you expect? When we speak of Jewish education, we're not talking about a secular approach to Jewish education, an academic approach. We'll teach history of the Jews. History of the Jews will keep a Jew Jewish, like Roman history will keep someone Roman. That's not going to keep him Jewish. We're not speaking of education, we're speaking of Jewish survival. We're speaking to educate the body, the mind, the emotions, the heart, the very soul of the child, to implant, to inculcate, to inspire this young child to the point where King Solomon wrote, Gam ki yaskin lo yosur mimenu, that as long as he is living, this will not depart from him. This is what we're talking about. This will be his guiding light and the armor that he'll need to survive in the world as a Jew. And our sages, they never refer to Jewish education as limud. Limud means to study. Malamed means to teach. No, they called it chinuch. And they called it chinuch because that's what King Solomon called it. Chanoch hanar al pi darkei. The word chinuch does not mean to study. Does not mean to teach. It does not mean to learn. The word chinuch means to inaugurate, to initiate. This is how you inaugurate a Jewish child to life. What you teach him in his youth, you set him in that direction, which if it's done properly, hopefully, he'll follow that direction the rest of his life. If you do not set him in the right direction, it's like a car without headlights in the midst of a fog. What can you expect? And there are many examples on this. The sages tell us that once the child starts to talk, this is before school age, the father should start speaking to the child Beloshen HaKodesh in Hebrew. And then Melamdei Torah Tziva Lonu Moshe, you teach him the first thing, how to say, Moshe has commanded us the Torah. And then, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This is the inauguration to life. The Maral Miprag brings, he says, this is the child's first light, first intellect. This is actually, he says, the birth of Torah in the world, because it comes from the children. Then the sages tell us, V'yahakach mi'at mi'at psukim. The father and the mother teaches him a sentence here, a sentence there, a few psukim, until he reaches the age where he's able to go to school. And whoever who does not do this, it says, Harei ki'ilu, heaven forbid kovrei. It says, it's as if you bury him. Why? You've thrown him into the middle of the currents, without any direction. What can you expect? Because of this, there were many old customs that when a child would start to study, they'd bring him to a cheder, and would start to study. They would make they would give him sweets. Some would put honey on an olive base. Some would wrap him in a talis, make a simcha. Because we're not talking about an academic process here. We're not talking how to teach someone to be a carpenter. That's important. That's for a livelihood. But we're talking how to initiate, how to inaugurate someone to life. And that this should stand in. Like King Solomon said, Chanei chanar ki oz ki yaskin la yosir mimenu. Even when he reaches old age, it will not depart from him. This is what we learned in the Mishnah in Oves. Elisha ben Avuya Eimer Halemed Yeled Lamaha Dovedoima Lejek Suva Nir Chodosh. When you teach a child something, what is it like? It's like taking a perfect piece of paper, bright, clean, good ink and writing. Halemi Zokain, you teach an older person something. Now, it's like taking an old piece of paper, ink that's not so good, and writing. I have a Mochotin, who's a doctor, and he has been specializing in the brain. He has been specializing in the brain for 40 years. I asked him a question. Why is it when we start to get a little older, our long-term memory is still excellent? We can remember things that happened to us 30, 40 years ago. But if you put down a pair of keys here and you turn around, you forgot where you left your keys. Why is it like that? Sometimes you think it's just what yourself, but you talk with other people, it's like that. He said simply. He said, what happened to you 30 or 40 years that made an impression on a young brain, and it makes a good impression, and that won't leave you. What happens to you now makes an impression on an older brain. It doesn't always stick so well. This is how they explained it. This is what the sages are saying. You teach a young child, that'll be with him the rest of his life. You teach an older person, we can hope, but you really have to hammer it in. You have to hammer it in. There was a lady, they told me, a Yiddish lady, she said that if I'm going to have to say v'ich gelegt shishlach one more time, I'll go out of my mind. Where did I leave the keys? There's another Gemara. There's a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Chofalef Amud Beis. They told Abaya, this is one of the sages of the Gemara, they told Abaya a certain halacha, which he was not sure of. They told it to him in the name of Rabbi Yirmiyah, that was not such a senior colleague of his, and he did accept it. Years later, they told him the same halacha in the name of the great Rabbi Yochanan, who was the Rosh Hashiba of the Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. And he said, if this is what Rabbi Yochanan said, then it has to be right, and he accepted it. Then he said, if I had merit, this would have been told to me 20 years ago when I was young. So he said, well, what's the difference? He says, a big difference. Yes, of the Yankusa Kaimai. Because something that you learn in your youth is far better than something that you learn in your older age. Rashi gives the Ankusa, Rashi says, Miskaim Yesem Mishal Zikna. It'll last much longer. Now, when we speak of this education, I'm going to ask two questions. They seem unrelated to each other. Firstly, we all know of our forefather Abraham, the great Avraham Avinu. He was 20 generations down the line from the creation of the world. Why did Hashem choose him, that his seed should be the blessed seed in the world? It'll come from him and his son Yitzchok and Yaakov. They will go to Har Sinai. They will receive the Torah. All of the nations in the world will be blessed through them. They will be the conscience and the moral guiding light for the world. Why? From Abraham. It's true, most of those 20 generations were not good generations, but there were individuals that were tzaddikim, that were righteous. There was Noah. There was Shesh. There was Shem and Eber. There were individuals. That's one question. Second question I'd like to ask is, who would you say was the world's greatest educator? We know who the world's great scientists were, great doctors were. Who would you say was the world's greatest educator? There's one answer to both of this. The rabbis teach, of all of the individual righteous people that lived in the first 20 generations of the world, they were capable of implanting the values of the Torah system in themselves, perhaps in their wives, perhaps in their immediate family, but not more. When it came to Noah, I couldn't find anyone except his close circle. When it came to Abraham, it states when Abraham left his homeland to go to Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, to the promised land, it said he took with him a nefesh asher osu b'chorim, the people that they made, he and Sarah, in his homeland. Who were the people they made? The Shabida Laraisa that they taught Torah to. Abraham had a yeshiva. Sarah had a yeshiva. Abraham had a yeshiva for the men. Sarah had a yeshiva for the women. You know how many people they taught? The Rambam says thousands and tens of thousands. When he left, he left with thousands of followers that he implanted the values of Torah in them. And Abraham carried this on. He went from one Medina to another, one empire to another, spreading these values. He even risked his life many, many times. He was an enormous educator. The Gemara says even his servant Eliezer was called Damesik Beisai. He was a Rosh Yeshiva. He heard what Abraham would teach, and he would also teach in the yeshiva. Sarah, in her own right, was a Rosh Yeshiva. Even his nephew Lot, who was not a righteous person, still, when the angels came to them, he took them in the house, even though it was dangerous for him. They wanted to kill him for that. Why? Because he had learned this in the house of Abraham. He gave them matzahs, it was Pesach. Even his son Ishmael, the father of the Arabs, it states that when the angels came, he sent his son to help prepare the meat, lechanech b'mitzvahs, to initiate him into mitzvahs. Till this day, we state the Arabs are very great machnisochim. You're a guest in their house, they will treat you like a king. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, the Almighty said, why will I choose Abraham? Because by him I will have a guarantee that my Torah will last in the world. Because he will implant this, he won't keep it just for himself and his family. He'll implant this in his children and in his children's children. Shomru derech Hashem las istoka v'mishpot. They will know the way of Hashem. They will always do istoka, what is good, righteous, and justice. Mishpot. Tava Hasi, let's go see. After Abraham, it was another long time. There were six generations until we stood at Sinai. Now we're talking thousands of years ago. In every generation, the Jews have gone through all of this turmoil. All of the nations have tried to destroy them. All of the nations have tried to baptize them, or Christianize them, or whatever. All of the nations have tried to mislead them. Abraham's teachings are still in the world, still with the Jews. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, he's my guarantee. No one else is. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose Abraham? Because he said he was the great educator, the greatest educator we ever had. There was a time, there has been times like today, but there was a time during the time of the rabbis of the Mishnah when they became very concerned because they said someone who had a father would see that his son learned. But someone who didn't have a father, the child didn't have an opportunity to learn. Someone who had a father that could hire a malamed, a teacher, he was able to. Someone who didn't have money, he couldn't. And they saw that this was a great danger to Israel. And they tried one thing and they tried another thing, it didn't work. Achabo Yeshua ben Gamla, until Yeshua ben Gamla came. And he, together with his court, they introduced a practice and a law in Israel that regardless of what the father wants to do on his own, If he wants to teach him on his own, wonderfully. If he wants to hire a private teacher for him, wonderfully. But regardless, they enacted that every community where there are Jews must have a base chinuch, must have, as a communal responsibility, a place for the children to learn. There they will go, and they will learn Torah. We're not speaking about great yeshivas. Most of the Jews in South Africa come from Lithuania. In Lithuania, you couldn't find a village that didn't have a cheder. Every village, if there were Jews, there was a cheder. They went there when they were 5 or 6 years old. They spent many hours there, many, many hours, because secular subjects were at a minimum. Many hours, they learned the Aleph Beis, and they learned the Hardavin, and they learned the Chumash, all of Chumash, and they would learn Nach, and they would stay there as long as they could. Already though, when they were 10 years old, 11 years old, many couldn't stay any longer. They had to go help out with Parnos or so forth. The, what we would call a high school yeshiva, that didn't exist in every village. That was in the cities. The yeshiva gedolas, that they were some of the greatest in the world were in Lithuania, the greatest. But they were not that many. They were far and far apart. But a cheder, every village had. And that was because of this practice. And you know what the sages said on this Reb Shul in Gamla? They said, if not for him, nihoya nishtakach Torah Yisrael. If not for him, Torah would have disappeared. The teachings of Avraham Avinu would have disappeared from Israel. And they said that whenever you say his name, you must say, Zocher Eso Ish L'Tov. You must say, we must remember him with a bracha. This is what he did for Klal Yisrael. You know, today, they'll tell you, in the last 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, this idea of public education, compulsory education, government education, new idea. This was by Jews for centuries. I read a book, which was speaking about in the 1600s in Poland, which at that time was the major Jewish community in Europe. It says the literacy rate of the Jew was 100%. That's what they said. Literacy rate of the Jew was 100%. Now, again, we're not talking about a secular perspective to Jewish practice or history, academics. We're not talking about bar mitzvah lessons or bas mitzvah lessons. That would succeed to make a person bar mitzvah. We're talking more. We're talking what King Solomon said, take the child. The Gemara says that once the child is capable of learning, you have to plant Torah in him and stuff him like a person would fatten an ox. That's it. You have to fatten him with Torah. Then, even when he's old, he will not forget. I once met an old Jew, an American, St. Louis, and he had learned in a cheder in Lithuania. He came to America. He happened to many at that time. He kept what he kept, a certain amount, and that was it. He started to say over by heart the psukim of the Chumash that he learned 40 years before in the cheder. This is how they fattened them. This has kept the light of Torah burning. How important is this mitzvah? The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shabbos, "Ein haTorah miskayim, ela bishvil tineikah shel beis rabam." Ein haOlam miskayim. The cornerstone of the world is based on this Jewish education. And we can understand why. And the Gemara tells us, "Ein mevatlin tineges shel beis rabban afilu lebinyan beis hamikdash." The Rambam brings that when the Mashiach will come, please God, and we'll go back to Eretz Yisrael and we'll go build the beis hamikdash, says it's a mitzvah on everyone to go help. Men, women, everyone must go help to rebuild the beis hamikdash. But he writes, and this is from the Gemara, the teachers of the children are not allowed to go, because you're not allowed to disrupt the teaching of the children Torah, even for their mitzvah. And the great Maharal of Prague says, well, why not? Could there be a greater mitzvah than building the Beis HaMikdash? He says, yes. Because when you build the Beis HaMikdash, you're implanting the Almighty into stones and into wood. But when you're teaching the children, you're implanting the Almighty into the hearts and the minds and the souls of new life that takes precedence. What priority should we give this? Now, when you ever speak to people about the priority of this Jewish education, which I like to refer to as Jewish survival, as I mentioned, we're not in the business of education. You have Fitz University, you have UNISA, you have Harvard and Yale. We're in the business of Jewish survival. We see what's happening in the world, that it could be unequaled, some historians are writing, where you have 90% of Jewish population throughout the world. I'm not referring to Eretz Yisrael, they're the numbers and the statistics and the action is different, but in the Gola, they are becoming estranged from Torah and Yiddishkeit. And that's not because of any force or any enticement. It's just because nobody ever taught them. But when you speak of Jewish education, so people will tell you, but the cost is enormous, especially today, because we have to even pay for the secular subjects in many cases. The cost is enormous. Everybody has their own problems. They got to, so it takes a lot of money today to make a living. They got to send their children to university. They got to marry off their children, and so forth, which is true. It's called a mitzvah. That's a mitzvah. Then they'll tell you there are so many needs. There's the Chevra Kedisha. There's the Gemachs. There's the old age homes. There's the sick. The poor. The shul. Help people get married. And then there's all of the needs of Eretz Yisrael. What priority should Jewish education take? When we take care of everything else, then we'll take care of Jewish education. It's a good question, but our sages have addressed this. They said the following: Le'olam ha-Talmud kodem, ha-Talmud bevi lidei maaseh. Torah education, you must give first priority to. And there's an obvious reason. Not necessarily because it should come before the sick, or before the cemetery, or before the aged, and so forth. No. But because if you teach Torah to children, then you'll have a Chevra Kedisha. You'll have a Jewish cemetery. You'll have Jewish old age homes. You'll have funds for tzedakah. You'll support Israel. If you don't teach Torah to the children, don't kid yourself. You'll end up with a Jewish cemetery, that's all. Because where's it going to come from? One of the first positions that we took, my Rebbetzin and myself and our family, was in a small town. And there was a larger town nearby. It was called Vineland, New Jersey. And there was an old Jewish community there. A number of years later, many, many years later, that area became sort of a boom area where a lot of refugees after the Second World War started to settle there. And there were a lot of religious ones, and they started to build a Jewish day school. There was an old Rav in Vineland, and they mentioned to me that he was an old Rav, he must have been 75, 80 years old. And they mentioned to me that he doesn't get interested in our work for building this new Jewish day school. When I see him, maybe I should have a word with him. So one day, I asked him. So he told me like this. He says, look, I'm an old man. I'll tell you a story. He says, when I came to Vineland, New Jersey, and there were two or three shuls in that small town, and big shuls. He says, I called in my balabatim, and I told them, you must build a Jewish day school. He said, it doesn't have to be where they learn, just Torah. They'll learn Torah, they'll get a good secular education also, but you must do it. And there was a whole discussion, a whole debate, and one Jew got up. He says, I remember it till today, and he said, Rebbe, your main toss is Europe. You think this is still Europe? You can't do this in America. And after that, the whole meeting swung away, and I wasn't successful. He says, so before I left the meeting, I warned them. I told them, I am giving you warning. If you will not heed my words, you will not have a shul. 10, 20, 30 years down the line, and this big shul will be empty. Because the sages say, "Im ein gedim tiyoshim minayim." If you don't have the little goats, where are you going to get the big goats from? Who are you going to fill the shul with? And he says, that's what happened. Today we have an empty shul. He didn't even have a minyan there. I think just on Mondays and Thursdays there was a minyan. So he said, look, I'm an old man now. This new day school that's being built, wonderful. You're a young man, go help it. See? But this was the story. But this is the Gemara. Gemara says you must always give Torah the priority, Torah education. Because a Torah may be Lide Maisa that will bring you to the rest. Who's going to come to the rest? Do you know that in the villages and in the small towns, the shtetlach, in Lithuania, in Europe, where there was Torah, they were very, very poor. But they had a Hevek Edisho, and they had a Meshev Zakenim, an old age home, and they had a Beis HaCholim, a Jewish hospital, and they had Achnosis Kala. They took care of the Chasanim and Kalas. And there was always a Kupal at Stokalanim for the poor. And they supported Eretz Yisrael. They had Pushkas who were sending money to Eretz Yisrael. And they had everything. In those places that didn't have a cheder and didn't have Torah, they ended up with nothing. Because there'd be no Jews. Not only that, it's a financial investment. It's a financial investment. Because people that come out of these schools are going to contribute to the community. In America, almost 100% of all of the aliyah to Eretz Yisrael comes from the Orthodox segment, which are old graduates of the Jewish day schools that started to be rebuilt after the Second World War. It's not coming from the conservative, it's not coming from the reform, it's not coming from the unaffiliated. And the same thing with the farms. So it's an investment in people. You want to build, you have to invest in people that there will be people to build. This is what our sages tell us. Le'olam ha-Talmud kodem. Talmud may be Lide Maisa. Let me cite a Gemara. An interesting Gemara. The Gemara in Aseches HaPaulim. Gemara says there was a great sage by the name of Reish Lakish. And he was trying to find the graves of the other sages. He wanted to mark them off. A lot of them were in caves, and they wanted to mark them off for the Kahanim, so the Kahanim would know where to go. And he couldn't find the graves of Reb Chiya. And he took that as a sign from heaven, that Reb Chiya was so much greater than him. It must be because, that must be the reason. So he said, Rebbeinu Shalom, he says, was Reb Chiya so much greater than myself? He said, I learned Torah as much as Reb Chiya. Why can't I find where he's buried? A voice of heaven came down and said, you learned Torah as much as Reb Chiya, but you didn't teach the children like Reb Chiya did. And the Gemara says, what did Reb Chiya do? And the Gemara says, if This is to show how far he would go. What did he do? When he heard that there was a town that didn't have a place for the children to learn, he went, he said he planted flax, he took the flax and he made nets out of them. With the nets he went and he captured deer. He shechted the deer, he gave the meat to poor children, poor orphans, he took the leather from the deer, and he wrote on the leather, he would write the five books of Moses in five separate books. He would go to such a village that didn't have. He would take five children, and he would teach each child one of the books. Then he would teach by heart the Mishnah to six. There are six different orders of the Mishnah. He would teach each child one. Then he would tell them, now you sit and learn with each other. Everyone should teach each other till I come back. It states he was a person who saved Klal Yisrael. This is how far he would go. I'd like to conclude with a statement. There was a young rabbi that came to America. I would imagine he actually lived in Riga, Latvia, and there they had to deal with the communists and whatnot. He came to America. This was probably just prior to the war. His name was Rabbi Pinchas Teitz. He married the daughter of a Rav from Elizabeth, New Jersey. That was a small Jewish community outside of New York. I don't know how many Jews it had. It had a nice Jewish population, but it was not at all a large city or a mega city. During the next 40 years, he became one of the most successful rabbonim in America. He built up a model community in that city that had everything. It had all the educational facilities. It had a cheder, it had a junior school, a high school. It had a number of shuls. It had mikvahs. It had nations and kingdoms, old age homes. It had everything that a Jewish city needed, a model Jewish city, at a time when the conservatives and the reform movements were just devouring, at that time, anything that was Jewish in America. There was once a questionnaire sent out that the question asked was, the future of American Jewry, who will it belong to? Will it belong to the Orthodox, the Conservative, or the Reform? This was probably sent out in the 1940s, 1950s. This was his answer. He answered, the future would belong to the group that spends the most on Jewish education. He says, in my community in Elizabeth, the Reform group spent $18,000 a year out of a $120,000 budget on Hebrew and Sunday school. So they were spending about a fifth, less than a fifth of their budget they were spending on Jewish education. The Orthodox community in Elizabeth spent $50,000 a year on all synagogue expenses and more than $1 million on education. They were spending 20 to 1. For every dollar that was spent on everything else that the Jewish community needed, $20 was being spent for Jewish education. And this turned out to become one of the finest Jewish communities, and it wasn't a mega city, one of the finest Jewish communities in America, when Jewish communities just couldn't survive. They were falling right, left, and center to the conservative and the reform. And he said, buildings you need, they're important. But that's not the ultimate. Eventually they're going to have to be replaced. Eventually they're going to crumble. Eventually there's movements. Children who are educated properly, they learn Torah values, they are the ones that are going to keep our nation alive. Not the buildings and not the other things. In other words, you educate a child, he will go build what the community needs. Don't educate the child, there'll be no one to build. So, again, let me conclude with what we started with. There are three enormous forces that threaten Jewish survival. The first is obvious. Sinas Hagoyim, the hatred that the nations have for us. Anti-Semitism, this we're witnessing right now. Just open your television and see what's going on in Israel. Wherever we turn, they're against us. The second is induced assimilation, where we were enticed and tempted to shed our Yiddishkeit, to advance our lives in the Goyish world. But there's a third that's doing far more damage than the first two ever did. And that is simply by neglecting, this is what our sages tell us, to inculcate, to implant, to educate the Jewish child, to fatten him with Torah like an ox, like our sages say. Kanechanar, that this will be his armor and his directing light forever, even into his old age. By not doing that, it's just by default. There's advantages today to be a Jew, not a disadvantage in the Western world. But by default, we are losing more Jews than we ever lost before. As I mentioned, the historians are wondering that you take the whole North America, South America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, the picture is the same. There might be 7 or 8%, 10% of Orthodox Jewry. The rest is either totally gone or on their way to be gone. And this is by doing nothing. This is how to survive, Jewish survival, how to survive to remain a Jew. Thank you very much.
So go after the rabbi and before we go to the questions, I'm sure there are some questions. I just want to say that this shiur and this lecture, I wish it will be delivered to the whole community. Because what you said is indeed, indeed, you're talking to the people who are already in that system. But this is such an important issue that I wish the whole
community. Do you agree with what I said?
120,000%. And not only that, it's nice to hear that from a person that fulfilled. It says in Na'e Doresh Na'e Mekayem. You know, some people can preach, but they don't do what they preach. The rabbi and the rabbitson, they preach what they do. And they've got an excellent, excellent proof to what he preaches today about the Jewish education and the importance of Jewish education. So I want to say to you, Yisher Koach, and maybe a little bit of this could be inserted on your Friday night sermon. So the last letter that you read about the 20 to 1, I think it should be inserted in the edit. Because here we've got 20 to 1 in a different way.
All right.
And any questions before the semifinal? I mean, there shouldn't be questions. I mean, we all agree with the. Thank you very much, and you are all invited to have a drink.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.